The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
And this is the Pat Kenny Show with Anton in for Pat. North Korea has tested an intercontinental ballistic missile, making an upgrade to what it has called the world's most powerful strategic weapon. The launch early on Thursday was the longest ballistic missile test with a flight time of 87 minutes. That's according to government sources in South Korea. I'm joined to get more detail by Robert E. Kelly, Professor of Political Science. Robert, good to talk to you again.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Robert, the significance of this launch, both in terms of what it shows us about North Korea's missile capacity and what it says about their foreign policy.
Sure, I think the easier one, I suppose, is the first question. That is that North Korea has been missilizing, for lack of a better word, it's pretty much its entire force now for several decades. North Korea's traditional conventional military is pretty obsolete and outclassed compared to its neighbors, you know, tanks and armored vehicles and things like that. Right? It really does. It really has leaned heavily into missiles in the last 25 years. And as you might imagine, wants to be able to range the United States, too, in order to directly threaten the Americans, who are the primary ally of South Korea. And the North Koreans have gotten better and better and better at developing these intercontinental ballistic missiles. And that's what it appears this was a test of. We can talk about that in a minute. What does that say about North Korean foreign policy? That's a little trickier. The North Koreans have been pretty belligerent for a long time. I'm not really sure this indicates any kind of a meaningful switch. I mean, it certainly makes things worse. I'm not sure it makes things dramatically worse. I think the North Koreans have had the ability to hit the United States for a while. I think there are other concerns on the table as well. But it certainly indicates that the Kim family continues to double down and triple down and quadruple down and so on missiles and nukes. I mean, it's just one more indication that they're just not changing.
In terms of the success of the test, did it demonstrate anything about their capability that the U.S. and others would not have been aware of?
I don't think so. Without getting too technical here, it looks like that the missile can go further than previous missiles. But they've never actually tried to like fire one in the direction of the United States, as you might imagine, like would probably provoke a response. So instead, what they do is they kind of basically shoot it like almost straight up, and the higher it goes, that indicates that if you shot it on a more normal trajectory, it would go longer. And so this one went a little bit higher than the previous one did, which suggests that it could go a little bit longer. But they've probably had the ability to range most of the United States for about 7 years now. The real issue, to get kind of technical here, the real issue is whether or not a missile they fired at the United States could actually survive reentry, because like reentry is really difficult. You know, it's like really hot and the friction on the nose cone and stuff would break it up if it isn't designed properly. That's one big issue, reentry technology. And the other big issue is guidance. Can they actually send it to a particular place as opposed to having it just land in like the middle of the Mojave Desert or something like that, right? And we just don't know if the North Koreans have those technologies.
In terms of their overall capability, one of the ways I assume that you can make up for precision guidance is with just sheer quantity. What sort of capacity do they have?
Yeah, that's true. And that's actually kind of what the Soviet Union used to do. The Soviet Union used to build these enormous missiles and huge numbers of warheads because they didn't know where they were going to land. So they just made them bigger and bigger and bigger to blanket the United States if there was a conflict. In North Korea, it's harder. That option is harder for North Korea, as you might imagine, because it's resource constrained, right? I mean, North Korea is pretty poor. Its economy is pretty weak. It's not clear the North Koreans can build the sheer number of warheads they would need for that kind of strategy. Most of the guesses from the American CIA and the South Korean version of the CIA suggest that the North Koreans have maybe 50 or 60 warheads, and they can produce maybe like 5 to 8 a year. And if those land in American cities or, you know, European cities or whatever, I mean, they're obviously hugely destructive. But that's not enough to like get past the sheer problem of guidance. I don't think that North Korea has that quantitative capability. Or if they were to get it, it would be a cumulative one. It would take them 20 or 30 years to get there, I think. And this is if I can extend this a bit, this is the big concern we have about the North Koreans' alignment with Russia in the last 8 months or so, is that the North Koreans are probably asking the Russians for these kinds of reentry and guidance technologies, right? Because they probably mastered the ability to just get the weapon there. Now they have to make sure it lands in a certain place.
And to what extent is Russia likely to be willing to provide that support?
Yeah, that's a huge debate in the analyst community. I was just at a conference on this 2 weeks ago, and like opinion was just all over the place. My own sense is that if the war drags on and on and on, and it's already gone on longer than Putin expected, then the Russians will be more and more willing to give stuff away. But when it was the Soviet Union, the Soviets were very, very hostile towards Allied nuclearization or missilization, right? And the East Bloc didn't get these kinds of weapons. They weren't allowed to build them. Everything was sort of Soviet stuff. And the Russians have traditionally been unwilling to give that kind of stuff away. They've looked the other way on North Korea's own indigenous efforts, but they haven't actually given the North Koreans too much specialized stuff. As you might imagine, I mean, you know, you don't want to give North Korea anything, right? I mean, you don't know where it's going to go, right? And Kim family is mercurial. You don't want to give them anything really major because you don't know who they're going to point it at. And I think it's really, at this point, it's really a function of Putin's desperation. My guess is that the Kim family probably bargained pretty hard for the ammunition, and now they're soldiers, North Korean soldiers in Ukraine. My guess is the Kims probably bargained pretty hard for those concessions and probably got something from the Russians on reentry, at least. So, yeah, I think the Russians probably given it away because, I mean, they're stuck, right? I mean, the war is, you know, it's kind of a quagmire for Putin.
Now, to that mercurial nature of the Kim family, how much of this belligerence is linked to that, and how much of it is real politic in the knowledge that if you are long on the axis of evil list from a world superpower, it is in your interest to regularly demonstrate your potential nuclear capacity?
Yeah, that latter point I think is correct. I think that's also pretty widely accepted, right? Which is that the North Korea is the most Orwellian tyrannical country on the planet. And I mean, it's like worse than the Soviet Union, worse than the Nazis. I mean, the North Koreans are just off the charts. And as a result of that, I mean, they have really, really hostile relations with much of the liberal world. And there's just only so much detente or negotiation can kind of bridge that gap because North Korea is so extreme. And so in order to protect the North Korean system, right, when they're badly outclassed conventionally, nuclear weapons are a great choice. I mean, I think it's really clear why they have them, and we spent a long time trying to prevent them from having them, but I think the rationale is pretty well understood. And, you know, that's why denuclearization is almost certainly impossible, and so that's why you're seeing counter discussions in South Korea, right, that maybe the South Koreans should build their own nuclear weapons because the North Koreans are never going to give up theirs. I mean, it's kind of in the interest of the North Koreans to actually tell us a little bit more about what they have and slow down a little bit, because if they don't, they encourage other democracies to respond in kind, encourages South Korea to build their own weapons, encourages Japan to do that, encourages all of us to build lots and lots of missile defense to shoot down North Korean missiles. I mean, it's smart in the short term for them to build this stuff, but in the long term, they're going to drive an arms race, and they can't win that arms race because they don't have the money. So, I mean,
Do they need to win the arms race? Because, I mean, when Russia and America were in the thick of the Civil War arms race, there was the ultimate goal of mutually assured complete destruction. Surely in North Korea's case, all they need to do is have sufficient capacity that it will mitigate against the likelihood of any superpower using ground forces.
Yeah, that's true. And they probably are there now, but technology changes over time. America's ability to sort of actually precision strike North Korean sites is actually pretty high. And of course, missile defense is getting better and better. You know, when, you know, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, missile defense, like actually shooting these things down, was kind of like a pipe dream back in the 1970s when they negotiated the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty. But missile defense is improving. And the North Koreans don't have the capacity to do what the Soviets did and build thousands and thousands and thousands. We think they don't have the capability to build thousands and thousands of nuclear weapons. And so, again, I would argue that it's actually kind of in North Korea's interest to negotiate with us a little bit and find some kind of stability, because they're just going to sort of drive the counter response. You already see that in South Korea. I mean, the only reason South Korea doesn't have nuclear weapons is because the Americans are twisting their arm. I mean, the South Koreans, they want to do this, and the North Koreans can't keep up. If the South Koreans build nuclear weapons, North Korea falls into a local nuclear arms race, which it can't win.
Now, on that thing of keeping up, what about the economic impact of all of this? Because I assume intercontinental ballistic missiles aren't cheap, and North Korea is not known for having a lot of money.
Yeah, that's right. And the North Korean answer is just to starve its own population regardless. I mean, that's one of the great tragedies, right, is that North Korea puts something on the order of 40% of its economy into the military, which is why, you know, they get, you know, something like 70% of the WHO's recommended caloric intake per day, because it's all going into the army, and they just don't care. I mean, they just don't. You know, we bang away at this. We try to get NGOs in there. We try to work with the UN. We try to get the World Food Program in there, you know, and they just, you know, it just doesn't work. I can get into that in some detail if you like, but the North Koreans are, they're really terrible on this point, and they just take their population carries the cost.
Sorry, that stat is remarkable. The entire country gets 70% of effectively the amount of calories it should from food. In other words, the entire country is malnourished so that the military can be fed.
That is the last time I heard that number. Of course, we don't know. That's the number I've heard from NGOs at the conferences and stuff like that. It could be higher or lower, but I believe it's something like that. I believe the average intake, if I remember, the WHO minimum is 1,800 calories a day, and the average North Korean gets something like 1,400 or 1,500.
And would you have any idea what they would have spent on a launch like this, on a test like this? It must be millions.
I actually don't know, but I would imagine that it is. Yeah, it's probably several. You got the missile itself. You got the fuel. The fuel is hard to get because the North Koreans probably have to get at least some of the chemicals from abroad and stuff. Probably several million, right? And yeah, that's a good point. I don't actually know. I could look that up.
Robert, maybe for the next time we will discuss that. I really appreciate your time this morning. That is Professor of Political Science, Robert E. Kelly.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.